Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, we talk about the June garden with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning, Mindy.
And if you have a question or a garden dilemma, you want to give us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I want to start out with the weather. Gorgeous weather right now. I wish we could hang on to this for the whole summer.
Yeah. Yesterday and today were just lovely. It's my preferred temperature range in the low 70s, nice and sunny. But, you know, this is one of those years, and I'm not a meteorologist or anything like that, but I get the sense that we're going to have a cooler than normal summer. And that happens here on the Cape every now and then when it just never really seems to warm up. And I don't know if it has to do with the El Nino that's forming in the Pacific or the Omega block that's in the middle of the country. But, yeah. You know, I like it on the cooler side rather than hot, but I do want sunny days.
Yeah, and it's the humidity, right? The humidity is low. Yeah. I think it's even if the temperature, I was thinking, whoa, it doesn't feel as warm as the thermometer is saying. And I think it's probably because the humidity is somewhere around 50%, right?
That's absolutely true. When I go down to the Phoenix area in March, usually to visit my two sons, it can be 90 degrees and it feels wonderful because there's no humidity.
Yeah, yeah.
More than 90, no, it's not comfortable, but you know.
Right. So before we get into what we're doing out in the garden, I want to talk a little bit about ticks because as anybody with a dog knows right now, the ticks this year are just crazy. And even in my own yard, I generally garden and don't have any trouble with ticks. This year is different. Seeing ticks.
There are a lot of ticks. I'm sure there's an explanation as to why they survive the winter. It's not at the tip of my fingers, but a lot of them survived the winter, have successfully come out. The nymphs were present during May, and they're still present now. And they're the tiniest stage in a deer. I'm speaking of deer ticks.
Mm-hmm, right.
They're the tiniest stage of the deer ticks cycle. And so it's easy not to see them. I usually will, before I go out to work in any area that has leaf litter or tall grass or stuff like that, I'll spray from the knee down with Deep Woods Off or permethrin, the one that's registered for spraying clothing. I have to admit, I've been careless this spring on those days where it's actually been dry enough and warm enough for me to work outside. I've just rushed out there, and consequently, one night I woke up feeling something weird on my arm, and it was an attached tick, partially engorged. And so my doctor gave me, a quick run of doxycycline. Mm-hmm. And then a week or so ago, I found one right on my stomach, right below the belly button attached. Fortunately, not engorged. So, yeah, and it's like, shame on you, Roberta. You know what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
How about doing it?
Yeah, the one thing I spray my shoes and pants with the permethrin, but I was out in the garden and I was crawling down underneath the plants and I must have gotten one on my shirt, which I didn't see. And luckily, I found when I'm done gardening, I usually take a shower. I must have when I took my shirt off next to the sink, it must have flopped into the sink because that's where I found it. I was like, oh boy, it was of course a deer tick. But you're finding a bunch of dog ticks in your yard.
I am, and I just saw my first one, and it was actually on me crawling up my leg when I came into the house. I've had several be on my clothing. They generally do not attach to humans. They can, but they generally don't prefer humans. But, I mean, if you have cats or dogs or, other pets indoors, they certainly, if you're bringing them indoors on your clothing, then they can find your pets. So your pets need to be protected as well. I even saw yesterday a deer tick crawling up the trim around my kitchen door. So they are out there, dog ticks and deer ticks.
And Lone Star ticks. We got to be, we're seeing more and more. If you're on the vineyard, boy, that seems to be, the hotbed for the Lone Star ticks, which can create all kinds of problems, including that alpha gal syndrome that so many people are contracting. So I guess it's a good year to have stock in permethrin and Deep Woods Off, isn't it?
it is, and it's don't be so excited to go outside that you don't spend a minute or two protecting yourself with something, either the deep woods off or the permethrin, because protection is the key to prevention.
Yeah, I just want to talk about that, too, because a lot of people think, oh, I'll spray my yard and I'll be okay. You're really better off spraying your, like with the permethrin on your clothes and your shoes, and it lasts but about six washings or something. You can even buy permethrin-treated clothing that's already.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. So really treating, you know, yourself is more effective than what this yard spraying stuff that they've been doing.
It is. And I know it's become sort of a popular option. The same thing for, you know, fogging your yard for mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. But it's a drop in the bucket. It's not a permanent solution. And you never know what non-target species are also going to be affected by the insecticide spray. So it's sort of like broadcasting this huge amount of material to target one small insect at where everything else is also vulnerable.
Right, and you
so
could be
protect yourself.
You could be killing lots of the good pollinators that we don't want
That's
to kill.
Right.
Yeah,
who are also in the leaf litter a larval stage.
All right. So what are you planting now? What do you work? I know we plant what we can when we can, right? But what are you focusing on now?
Well, I have to say I jumped ahead this year, and I got a lot of things in early. I got my tomatoes and peppers in actually the Mother's Day weekend. I sort of regretted it when I got up the other morning, and it was actually 38 in my yard at 5:30 in the morning. However, because the tomatoes and peppers have been in the garden so long, they're fully hardened off, and they're also fully established with a wonderful root system, so they brushed it off. Mm-hmm. My basil wasn't too happy, but so now I'm thinking of replacing my basil. I've also fenced in my raised beds with the plastic fencing I've been using every year for at least 6 or 7 years, with great success for the rabbits. However, this year, I don't know whether the rabbits have mutated or what, but they're now chewing holes in my plastic fencing. So I no longer have any peas. I no longer have any parsley. I no longer have any dill. So that's what I'm going to focus on replanting.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. My parsley reseeded itself. I bought
wonderful.
I know. I bought one little parsley plant, and I have all kinds of parsley. And surprisingly, one of my rosemary plants made it, which after this winter was shocking to me because usually they make it until about February and then that's it. So one of them died and one of them made it through the winter, which was, like I said, a surprise. Something happened, though, that has never happened to me before. I added another raised bed, and in that bed I planted some lettuce and carrots, and nothing. The lettuce sort of, you know, a little bit, but nothing with it. So I replanted the carrots, reseeded. Nothing. And I thought, maybe there's something wrong with this dirt, right? And then I planted some yellow beans, you know, and wax beans, and they're coming up great, and still no carrots. The easiest thing in the world to plant, and for whatever reason, the carrots are not liking this bed.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
You know, every year is an adventure in the garden. We have success with something that we never had success before, and yet things that are tried and true fail.
Yeah.
So it's always kind of exciting.
Yeah.
My vegetable garden is pretty much all planted. I do need to tackle my old asparagus bed and give it a thorough weeding, and then next spring I'm going to add some more dormant crowns. The asparagus is about 20 years old, and it's gotten a little bit shaded, and it's now not producing as much as I would like. There is absolutely nothing, if you haven't grown asparagus, I highly recommend it, because you will never want to eat store-bought asparagus again for the summer.
True.
You'll want it in the winter, but in the summer you'll have wonderful fresh asparagus, and there's nothing like it.
Yeah, boy, you can't even describe. It's just such a different taste for sure.
And all
I can think of is my carrot seeds were not this season, so I'm going to buy some this season and give it one more try and see what happens.
I don't know how well carrot seeds, how long they remain viable from year to year. There are some seeds I usually buy fresh. Carrots are usually one of them. Lettuce, though, I'm surprised because usually lettuce seed lasts for a number of years, and I'm surprised that didn't come up for you.
A little bit did, but not like it usually does. So we already have an email. What is Roberta's summertime feeding routine for her vegetable garden? How often, what does she use, and any special soil amendments for particular vegetables like tomatoes? And does Epsom salt really help with tomato growth?
No.
No.
Forget the Epsom salt. I every year before I plant, I have 7 raised beds. They're 12x4, and I put a 2-cubic-foot bag of bumper crop on each bed. I dump it on the bed, spread it out, and then I add fertilizer. And in spring, I use a 5-10-5 or a 5-10-10. It's not organic, but the soil is still cold at that time, and the soluble synthetic fertilizer is readily available, whereas organic takes a little bit longer to be available to plants. And then I have a little battery-operated tiller, very lightweight. I bought it online, and I till my beds, so my soil is all my beds are ready for when I'm ready to plant. I do like to add, when I'm planting my tomatoes, I like to add some Osmocote, which is a slow-release fertilizer, and I work it into the soil around where I'm planting each individual plant. Sometime in mid to late July, I'll go back in with some Garden Tone or something like that and top dress the tomatoes and peppers. Those probably, maybe the squash, but usually just the tomatoes and peppers. Just a light application to just get them through the rest of the summer. And that's about it.
Yeah. I'm wondering, too, maybe I need to do a little of that in that new bed I was talking about, because I really just put compost in there and I didn't put any kind of fertilizer. So that might be my carrots or seeds are like, no.
Yeah, not enough nutrients. I've really become a fan of bumper crop. It's a nice, lightweight product. It has a couple of different types of mycorrhizae in it, which are types of fungi that have a symbiotic relationship with plant roots, so it enables a plant to gain certain nutrients out of the soil that are a little harder to uptake. And it's just, I've had great success with my vegetable garden and my containers that I grow vegetables in by adding bumper crop on an annual basis.
Bumper crop, and I have not heard of it. That's what it's called? You just find it at the garden centers?
Bumper crop, yep. It comes usually in a 2-cubic-foot or a 1-cubic-foot bag. And it's not inexpensive, but then nothing at the garden center is inexpensive. Which is, you know, we struggle with that. The unfortunate side effect of rising diesel cost is everything at a garden center comes in by tractor-trailer truck.
Right.
And, of course, it runs on diesel. So, you know, things are expensive.
All right. 866-999-4626 is our number for your garden questions or solutions, too. We're always looking for solutions. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. What are some of the plants that benefit from pinching back? I know one of the things, the asters, I pinch back until about 4th of July weekend. What are some of the other ones?
Well, Montauk Daisy, if you don't want it to be 3 or 4 feet tall, also enjoys being pinched back. I cut mine back actually fairly severely in spring. I have not gotten around to it yet this year. I'm way behind on a lot of things, so I'm going to enjoy very tall Montauk Daisy in October because it's getting a little late to do it now for me because I take a lot. If I were just going to take a little, I'd go ahead and out there. but I have so many tasks on my list that
that's down at the bottom.
That's down towards the bottom. Yes, I have six packs of annuals that are calling to me. They want to be in my garden, so that's up the top. And getting the rest of the houseplants outside.
Yeah, I've gotten all mine out. I was ahead of the game on that for sure. And what's interesting is it's funny how some of those houseplants, like the amaryllis and some of this, that they just love being out. I have an amaryllis in full bloom right now that is just absolutely gorgeous.
Yep. I have one that's in full bloom, and then I have like three or four pots that have all flower stalks pushing up, and they just love being outside.
Yeah. I have an orchid. I'm not sure. It's not the common one. It's something I got at the Martha's Vineyard, you know, the farmer's market they have a couple years ago, maybe more than a couple.
Oh, nice.
The orchid lady there is amazing, by the way. If you're ever out there, she has the most beautiful orchids, and she knows everything about them. And this one really interesting one that I bought from her, it never blooms in the house, but when I put it out in the summertime, it'll bloom twice. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk to Linda, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a couple things. My carrots have not germinated. I've planted them twice.
Ah.
This is the third year in a row this has happened. Eventually, if I plant some like the end of July, I get a little bit of a crop. It may be, as you say, some amendments needed, but other things are doing fine. And I have just struggled with carrots for 3 years. And in the past, they've been fine in my garden.
Funny?
So I don't know.
Yeah.
But the other thing I wanted to say is I grow dahlias, and I've planted my dahlias. And, you know, I have a great method for keeping the rabbits off. But I honestly, when you look at some of these society recommendations, I don't do most of what they say because it's so cumbersome and labor intense, and they do beautifully.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
I wrap them in newspaper and put them in a box.
Yeah.
You know, my basement isn't the temperature they say would be ideal, and I'm not doing vermiculite and all sorts of, you know, stuff to put them in. It's in newspaper in a box, and they come out beautifully year after year.
Yeah. I also do the dahlias, and, I don't dig all of them up anymore. I dig the ones that are my favorites. And the others, like, oh, we'll see what happens, right?
Yeah. Well, and I have found that some of the older, not overly hybridized, newest, greatest, trying to make something special, the older ones, when you go to dig those up, the clumps are huge and plump, and they store better than any other.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
I agree
not
with
the
that.
Big, beautiful. Yeah, for sure. The only other thing I want to say is I had a beautiful purple flower in my yard for a couple of years, and I would pick it and put it in vases with the dahlias, and it was gorgeous. And I found out, I wondered what it was. It was wolfsbane, and I have no idea where it came from. I had no business picking it, and I have dug it up, and I'm still seeing little seedlings popping up.
Mm. Well, maybe.
I love wolfsbane. It's aconitum. It's a gorgeous perennial. And yes, if someone were not careful enough and ate it, which I doubt anyone would do, except maybe a child, it is poisonous. It is toxic. But it is a gorgeous later blooming plant.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But it sounded like just touching it, that the skin irritation would be awful.
Hmm.
Oh, I've been working with it for years, and I've never had a problem with that. I try not to break the stem, so I'm getting sap on my hands, or wear gardening gloves if I'm handling it. But it's a beautiful, beautiful late flowering perennial, and that it's that deep purple color that you really don't get in a lot of plants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I dug mine out and threw it away.
Oh, dear.
But now I know, you know, that it can be, you know, safely grown and just not touched and not fooled around with too much.
Yeah.
That's right.
Linda, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Appreciate that. As Linda said, she didn't plant it. And that happens a lot, right? I have something, I'm not even sure what it is. And I'm like, thank you, whatever bird dropped that, right? Because a lot of times it's the birds.
I call them gifts of nature. I have a beautiful Brunnera perennial that popped up in my back garden off my deck a few years ago. I did not plant it. And it has the most gorgeous blue flowers in spring. It's just lovely. And so I say, thank you, nature.
Yeah. And then sometimes it's not a thank you. Like I was out gardening on Monday, and I was like, what the heck? And I had all this big patch of mugwort, and I thought, where the heck did that come from? And I all I can think of is I had moved some lilies from another side of the yard over there, and I wonder if maybe the mugwort came with them. At least it's easy to pull up.
It is easy to pull up endlessly. My biggest bugaboo for weeds is creeping buttercup, which is a lovely plant when you only have one of it, but you never only have one. Then it's called creeping for a reason, and I have a very large swath of it out where my raised beds are, and it comes up in the beds, and the roots seem to go forever. It's right. Very difficult to manage, so I try to just, in fact, that's on my list for things to do today, weed whack the ranunculus.
Yeah. Oh, and the bindweed, of course. You never, yep. You can't win. It moves further and further throughout the yard, right? And all you can do is just keep pulling it up.
I have a funny story about a particular plant. It's a type of Doronicum, which is a leopard's bane, a beautiful bright yellow daisy flower. It's in full bloom right now. My dear girlfriend, Deborah Swanson, gave me some many, many years ago, and I planted it in one of my beds near the house. Well, over the years, it's no longer in that bed. It's jumped the driveway. It's gone through the woods. I think it's now showing up in my backyard neighbor's yard. And it just goes on and on and on. It's gorgeous in bloom. By July, it's dormant, so I don't think anyone minds.
Wow. 866-999-4626 is our number for your gardening questions or dilemmas. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I wanted to talk about fireflies. Everybody looks forward to it. And for some reason, I always think of them as a late summer thing. And I was reading, I think it's July 3rd that the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary has a firefly walk. And I thought, oh, that seems early. And I was looking it up. And actually, they say the season here for fireflies is Memorial Day through July. And I always thought of them as an August thing.
Yeah, it's. I see the bulk of them in July, after the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. They really like hot, or maybe not hot, but warmer and more humid weather. Mm-hmm. To me, they're like, oh, yes, summer is truly here when I see a firefly. Yeah. I get so excited about it. I mean, I have memories of a child,
sure.
running around after dusk, capturing
with
fireflies
jar.
In jars.
Yeah.
then you had to let them all go before you could come in for the night. It's just wonderful. But they're not a fly.
Right.
They're a beetle. So they're also called lightning bugs, mm-hmm. and they're not a bug. They're a beetle. There are true bugs, and there are beetles, and they are a beetle. They're fascinating in that it's an insect that uses what they call bioluminescence as part of their signaling to other insects. Even the larvae, which were called glowworms, can light up. And it's thought that originally that bioluminescence was used to warn off predators that, hey, I'm toxic, don't eat me. And for the adult firefly, it's actually a mating signal. And each species has a slightly different rate of blinking that light. So I think that's fascinating.
That is fascinating. Because who knew there's over 100 species, right?
There's lots and lots
of
species. Lots of
them. And where would you find their larvae? Where do they lay eggs, I'm assuming? I don't know. Is it grasses?
They lay their eggs down in the upper layer of the soil, and when the larvae emerge, they actually feed on worms, they feed on slugs, they feed on, they're predaceous, they mm-hmm. feed on things like that. The adults usually just feed on pollen, so you can find them. The female is like, she's lying when they're all out. She's sitting down on foliage. She's lower down. It's the male that's flying around, mm-hmm. blinking. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because they actually choose which male they're going to respond to. So when they find a male firefly that who's blinking excites them, they blink in response. And so then you have a pair.
Come on down. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's funny. All right. So we'll start seeing them soon, right?
They usually appear, the literature says anytime between, Memorial Day and the end of July. I tend to find most of them, I see them early July. Mm-hmm. And so I start looking and go, yay, fireflies, when I finally see them.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Tor, who's giving us a call from Orleans. Hi, Tor.
Oh, good morning, Mindy. And to you, Roberta. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so my questions revolve mostly around a butterfly favorite that encourages the American copper, formerly known as flame copper, because it flits about the ground story and the lower part of the garden, looking like a little burst of wildfire. So what is its favorite plant that I want to address is sheep sorrel. Are you familiar with sheep sorrel that forms a ground cover even between lanes of Route 6? Do you see it usually in carpeting?
Yes, and as a child growing up, I loved sheep sorrel. I called it sour grass because I thought it tasted wonderful. But it is a terrible weed. Well, not terrible if it supports a wonderful butterfly species, but it can be, if you care about your lawn, it can be a noxious weed. I'm not crazy about lawns. I like something green out there. And when the sorrel, sheep sorrel, is not in bloom, it's green, so I don't mind it.
Well, as a trooper for butterfly gardening, that phrase that haunts so many lepidopterists is the garden gone to benign, weedy neglect.
Mm-hmm.
That's a favorite from Robert Michael Pyle. And we see that again is if we let the sheep sorrel grow, the larvae of the American copper, which is dazzling little thumbnail-sized butterfly, is just at home. Mm-hmm. The larvae love and feed on that. So I like the appearance of it, too. It has a little sort of a tawny russet color, a little pale orange, and it spreads in a natural way. I wish it weren't designated as an offensive weed, but
It tends to like more dry, low nutrient type soil, which I certainly have in what passes for a lawn. And it was just blooming this week, and I had a very tall patch of it, and then yesterday my lawn finally got mowed, so I no longer see that tawny color. It's just green again.
Yeah. Hey, Tor, I want to ask you a question since I know so much about butterflies. What is happening with, and not just one particular species, it seems like maybe 15 years ago there would be so many different kinds of butterflies in my garden, and I often wonder if it's maybe the lawn pesticides and things that neighbors are doing. What do you attribute this sort of decline in the butterfly population?
Well, that's the very question that was probing. We're all searching for answers for this, and it's amazing how opinions differ. But let's say now that if the lawns, like the farmers opened up New England in a very good way with open space and clearly pastures rimmed in with sylvan woodland edges, sylvan edges, where a lot of these species naturally then can proliferate. So that seemed to be setting up. As soon as we introduce pesticides and herbicides, and then that awesome weed killer glyphosate in Roundup, if that's used intensively, we're going to lose certain plants that provide the habitat. And beyond that, I think your guess is as good as mine. I wish I could say definitely that the cause is the pesticides, herbicides. And yet we have maybe trees felled that or bushes that provide the ground story bushes that are sort of taken away in favor of the landscaping of modern horticulture.
So basically, it's not one thing; it's a combination of things. Yeah.
I think it's probably a fairly complex issue.
Yeah, Yeah. Tor, thanks for the phone call. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we have an email from a listener in Falmouth that says, we planted lots of crocus, daffodils, and tulips last fall, so our early spring yard was full of color. But now that we're into June, all that color has gone by. What flowers do you plant to have color in your yard in June and July? This was something on my list, Roberta, just sort of assessing, and it takes a few years, right, to go to have at least perennials, something always in bloom. So talk a little bit about that.
Oh, well, it does, and a lot of it depends on is your yard full sun? Is your yard mostly shade? Is it a mix of the two? The sunny yards tend to have things that are in bloom more frequently, whereas plants in the shade are grown more for their foliage. Their flowers are usually less conspicuous or less spectacular than those that are growing in the sun. I always like to, when I'm at the garden center, walk through the perennial section and see what's in bloom. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're sort of in a little pause in terms of perennials, although my Siberian iris are all in bloom. The German iris have been blooming, now just starting to go by. Soon, we'll have spectacular hydrangeas. Already, I have hydrangeas that are all budded up. I can see the buds coming, so by the end of the month, I'll have a beautiful sea of blue in my yard. I have extensive plantings of hydrangea, most of which, I will have to say, self-seeded from a hydrangea called Tough Stuff, which is I'm pretty sure it was Tough Stuff. It's a lace cap hydrangea that reblooms, and it also sets seed. So mm-hmm. I have lots of little seedling hydrangeas that I dig up and move around my yard. So when they're all in bloom, it really looks very pretty. But I think for continuous bloom, because the idea that a perennial plant will have flowers the entire summer is incorrect.
It doesn't happen, yeah.
It doesn't happen. Perennials have a set time of bloom, and then they're gone by and something else comes in bloom. UMass had a fact sheet, and they probably still have it, called Sequence of Bloom in the Perennial Garden. And it starts in April and goes month by month into October, listing what is generally in bloom during those months. So if you go to the UMass Extension website, you can probably find that, or you could contact the local Cape Cod Extension and mm-hmm. see if they have copies of it available. It's a great little publication. The cultivars that are mentioned in it are probably more out of date because it was written quite some time ago, but the sequence of bloom remains the same in terms of the genus and species of the plant.
Yeah, and then as you were, I know you're about to say it, but if you want continual bloom, that's annuals.
Annuals.
Yeah, which can get expensive depending on how much color you need. But yeah,
it's... they're still the bargain of the garden center. Although the growers are tripping us all up. It all used to be standard six packs.
Yes. Hard to find now, yeah.
Well, now we still get six packs in at the garden center where I work, but a lot of things come in four packs
mm-hmm.
Or three packs.
Yeah.
And they're all the same price. So shop carefully if you're on a budget.
Yeah, and also I guess it depends on how much work you want to do too. I have a lot of lilies in my yard and they bloom at different times. So, mm-hmm. I have some lilies that are about to bloom now and there'll be some that bloom a little bit later in the summer. August is when that's when my dahlias take over.
Yes, dahlias and some of the later lilies are the star of August. My garden becomes somewhat yellow in August because of all the Rudbeckia and the yellow flowering daisy-type flowers that bloom later in the summer.
Yeah.
I just enjoy being able to sit outside and listen to the insects and the birds, and hopefully we're done with leaf blowing by that time.
I know, it gets so loud.
Yeah. The thing is, and I know everybody does it. I'm guilty myself, but I just really get tired of hearing machinery, lawn mowers, leaf blowers, weed whackers, when I'm trying to sit outside and just enjoy the ambiance of the garden.
Exactly. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Eric, hang on. We'll get to you right after the break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about the June garden with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Eric is calling from Sandwich. Hi, Eric.
Good morning, Mindy, and good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
Enjoying the discussion this morning. I am spending a lot of time in my garden right now trying to eliminate or at least control varieties of flowers that I have purchased in the past that have, unbeknownst to me at the time that I bought them, are noxious or aggressive, however you want to describe them. But they not only take over my beds, but they go into my lawns, they go into my neighbor's lawns. And I have a daisy that, unfortunately, I don't know the name of, but Roberta, you may be familiar with this. It grows very tall. It sends out rhizomes as well as seeds, and it's probably 4 or 5 feet high, and it'll just cover an entire bed. And I'm finding them everywhere, but I have this ajuga, this daisy, my neighbor's English ivy, my neighbor's burning bush. So my question is, I realize I should be doing more to know about the habits of these species, but I feel that the garden center should have some responsibility to identify plants as being persistent or aggressive or something. And, you know, I know they're in the business of selling flowers, but, you know, in this, I feel like there's a kind of a emerging effort to kind of foster more native plantings on the Cape. And in keeping with that, you would think that there'd be a better effort to kind of identify what might be causing problems, you know, in our neighborhoods.
Well, I know that most garden centers keep track of what the state has included onto its list of invasive species, and those plants are no longer permitted to be sold in Massachusetts. You mentioned burning bush. That's been on the list for a number of years, so people cannot go to a garden center and buy burning bush right now. They should not be able to go to a garden center and buy something like creeping Jenny, which is a vine that takes over the ground cover. So a good, reputable garden center will be following the guidelines from the state on what's invasive and not sell it. But I do agree with you that in speaking with customers who are at a garden center, you know, looking for something to plant, it's a good idea for the staff who's working there to be able to point out, you know, you might like this, but it's going to be somewhat aggressive. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could, you know, use some sort of barrier to contain it or use this alternative plant, which gives you the same effect but doesn't have those aggressive characteristics. It's really interesting to see over the years what has made the list and what has not. Years ago, I planted, to my endless regret, gooseneck lissimachia, which is a lovely flower, but the thing just, you know, can grow to Cleveland, and it's a problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, it also behooves the gardener to educate themselves as well as to what is or is not an aggressive plant. And there's a difference between aggressive and invasive,
right?
Very specific parameters outlining what is determined to be invasive. But yeah, a lot of education is needed, so we're not introducing things that autumn olive was, you know, originally brought into this country for erosion control and for hedgerows, and now it's everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really a noxious weed. Japanese honeysuckle bush, same thing. So in the early days of plant exploration, that, you know, invasiveness wasn't even something that was thought about. And now many, many years later, we're dealing with the consequences. Yeah.
And Eric, Roberta said something, reputable garden centers, they know, they'll be able to, when you ask them questions, it's like the big box stores, they just get this, these flowers in, and they don't really always know, you know, exactly what they're selling.
Right, right.
But when you go to the garden centers and you ask and you tell them, hey, I've got this section here, it's got a lot of sun, I'm looking for something that's, you know, whatever color, or what, they're usually very helpful. And they'll be able to tell you, you know, like when you're buying Lily of the Valley, I hope you, it's like, now that's a native plant, but that is, again, an aggressive plant that will spread and spread and spread. Right. So,
I can speak to that.
We have a grower here in South Sandwich that grows all native plants, mm-hmm. native to Cape Cod, and he's a very small operation. But I just wish there were more opportunities like his right. his little nursery, where you could get native plantings that support the local, you know, insect community, as well as, you know, it doesn't invade or, you know.
Yeah.
Eric, what exists on the forest floor?
Yeah, I think a lot of us, if we could start over from scratch and knowing what we know now, we would want to do a little
Correct.
More of that. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, well, I know the garden center. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say the English ivy issue. It's just taking over all the trees.
Yeah.
And you know, you see even squirrels won't even go up a tree that's covered in English ivy, I've noticed. And it's just,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, we hear you.
It's out of the box, so I guess it's, it might be too late to be worried about such things, but I just feel like there should be greater awareness.
I think there is a trend in that way with, you know, people looking more, especially with the droughts that we've had, and people looking for, you know, a garden that's a little easier to tend to. People, I think there is this trend towards more native plants, don't you think, Roberta?
Yes, and in the garden center I work at has a very large section, both in the nursery and in the perennial section, that focuses exclusively on native plants. Mm-hmm. And I suspect many other, again, reputable garden centers on the Cape would also be having an area specified for native plants, because customers come in and that's what they're looking for. You know, so the awareness is there, and it's the industry is responding to that.
Yep. Eric, thanks for the call. Kate writes, I moved to Marston's Mills about 2 months ago. It's been very exciting seeing what's planted. There is a corner that is very sandy and desert looking, all sandy and weeds. One weed is mustard garlic. Reading about that weed, it doesn't seem friendly. The other plant growing is sassafras, which apparently was cut down and is sprouting quite healthy. Is the area barren due to the mustard garlic, or should the sassafras be removed? I read the leaves are pretty in the fall. Thank you for your time. Get rid of the mustard garlic.
garlic mustard is a noxious weed. If you can identify it early in the season and get it before it goes to seed, it helps, but it doesn't eliminate it. So it's just a constant problem with weeding out these things. Sassafras is fabulous. Mm-hmm. I would not remove the sassafras. It supports various species of butterflies. It has really cool foliage, like mittens, and it does turn an amazing orange flame color in the fall, and it's native.
Yeah.
So I think sassafras, if you had to choose between garlic mustard and sassafras, go for the sassafras.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Tim calling from Provincetown. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, Mindy. Hi, Roberta.
Hi.
I have a question about zinnias. I plant them every year, and I plant them in large groups and often have success. And I always start with seed, and then as they start to sprout, I have them covered with little plastic cups to keep the rabbits away. And then eventually I have to put up chicken wire till I get to a certain height. And then I'm pretty certain that, you know, the rabbits will leave them alone because they've reached that height there. That's just too much. What I'd like to know is, after planting seeds, is it possible that I could just spray the topsoil with the seeds already planted with PlantSkid? Would that be a deterrent, as PlantSkid might be later on in the zinnia life?
I don't know that that would be effective on just on the soil. I'm actually, this is, and I don't know if this is going to work, but I mentioned earlier in the show that the bunnies have evolved to be chewing holes in my fencing, plastic fencing. So I'm spraying my plastic fencing with PlantSkid, which smells atrocious, but the bunnies don't like it. I would wait as soon as you see your zinnias sprouting, then hit them with PlantSkid. And you can keep doing that. PlantSkid will last through several rains, so it isn't necessary to run out there and reapply it after it rains. So I put in some really nice zinnias, a couple of individual plants that I bought at a local grower, and I go out once a week and hit them with PlantSkid, and so far so good. Mm. They're not fenced in, so the bunnies have access to them, but they're leaving them alone.
All right, Tim, give it a try. Yeah,
I will.
Thanks
for your advice.
All right, Marilyn says, we have a large native dogwood in our yard. Some years it's been covered with white blossoms, but this year it appeared that only one branch had flowers. Just wondering if there's anything we should be doing to help it.
No, it's probably reacting to something in the environment, you know, maybe something in the winter. Also, I find with Coosa dogwood, not necessarily the native flowering dogwood, but in Coosa dogwood, sometimes when they've had a fabulous bloom and fruit set one year, the following year, there's hardly any bloom at all. So sometimes you have alternate year blooming. It occurs in plants. It occurs in apples, for example, and it also occurs in dogwood. So that might be the issue.
What's going on? All right, we've got a couple minutes. Let's try to squeeze in Valerie, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Roberta.
Hi.
I was listening about the invasive issue, and I'm just tearing my hair out about the violets in the garden and the lawn now. And I even went to ChatGPT, and they say, obviously, besides physically trying to get to the roots, you really need herbicides, but then it's going to kill the rest of the garden plants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've learned to love violets. Mm-hmm. They're very pretty when they bloom. They also support a wide variety of butterflies, surprisingly. So I live with the violets. I don't have a perfect lawn. Mm-hmm. If you stand back and look at it, it's green. if you look at it up close, there's a lot of different plants in that lawn besides grass.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I have the same thing, violets, but and it used to be just the purple. Now I have some little spotted ones. They're very pretty, and after my flowers kind of grow up and cover the violets, sometimes I pull them up, sometimes I don't. I also learned to live with them.
You know that they're really pushing out other plants.
When I find them in that, I just pull them up. Just go through and every year just pull up when they get big, or if they're in the way of something else, I just kind of pull them out.
I don't use chemicals in my yard. A great tool for getting rid of them is called a hori hori, or a Japanese weeding knife, and you just push it down in the soil next to the violet and bend it over, and it pops the violet right out of the ground. It's a very easy way to get rid of the excess violets.
Yeah. Valerie, good luck with that. Thank you for the call. Just about 30 seconds left. I want to mention we're a little bit early this month having you on, but you're usually here the third Tuesday of the month. So we'll be talking July before you know it.
That's right.
As always, Roberta, thank you. Thanks for your advice. We always appreciate having you on the show.
My pleasure.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Produced by me, Amy Vince, with production assistance from Dan Tridle and Elsa Partan. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.